7:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. I've asked Jack Watts to come back on Church and Culture today for a very specific reason. Jack has spent much of his life in the world of religion, in the world of major evangelical leaders and press and media. He's very, very knowledgeable about politics and the uses and misuses of the media. Last time I had him on the show, we talked about his career as a writer, as a novelist, which I'll mention some of his books later on in the program. But Jack Watts, welcome back to Church and Culture.
I'm glad to be here, Dale. This is always a lot of fun for me.
Well, you're my kind of guy. You're a straight talker. You don't duck issues, and you speak from the heart. I think that's all a good combination as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Are you ready to talk about this election and the use and abuse of the media? And then on a little later, we're going to talk about a podcast I listened to today, this morning early, that you did, I believe, yesterday with your brother about some pretty shattering news, which may well be revealed on November 1st. And I want to focus on that later in the program, and I want to tell our audience you need to hang around and listen to that. It's pretty amazing. But first, Jack, look, there's been so much commentary in social media about the way in which Google and Facebook and Twitter and on and on and on have filtered the news, set the logarithms so that everything positive about Mrs. Clinton rises to the top. Everything negative about Mr. Trump rises to the top. You can go on there and search for things like, is Trump pro-life? You can't even find it until the sixth or seventh page of a Google search. And then we've also got, you know, CNN acting like an arm of the Clinton campaign, much less MSNBC. Even Fox has started to cave. Do any of these people have a right to be even called journalists anymore?
Well, you know, I think that there are a couple of things. One, I think it's very clear that the mainstream media, ABC, NBC, CBS, The Washington Post, New York Times, MSNBC, are all surrogates, essentially, of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. But when it comes to, even though Google and Facebook and their algorithms have make it difficult to find what you want, I think that the social media is squarely in the populist camp, and that it's dominated by people with thoughts that are contrary to what you see in the mainstream media. And as much as people bemoan what's happening with, you know, the major networks and all, they don't pay attention to them like they once did.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was a kid, You know, if Walter Cronkite said it, it was true.
Yes, and it was, usually.
Yes, and you believed him. You trusted him. Now, you know, it's a joke. I'm Brian Williams, and I was there, you know, when, you know, Joe Blow got AIDS from kissing the Blarney Stone.
And I'm Hillary Clinton, who was on the tarmac and had to duck bullets from the Serbian militia.
Well, and, you know, they do their... The thing is that when you go out of your way to be unfair, you lose your credibility pretty quickly.
But has it been lost? I mean, when you're looking at a mainstream media of which there used to be only one choice for what might be called fair and balanced, and that's Fox. But Fox has been steadily losing that with Megyn Kelly's obvious tirade against Donald Trump and some other, you know, odd goings on there. You almost can't find any place to go for television news.
There are several at Fox, Shep Smith, particularly, and somewhat Megan. She kind of vacillates, if you ask me. You know, Hannity is exactly the opposite. You know, he's very clear what he wants, and you know, and he's my favorite guy in that sense. Even though there is this huge desire, and the thing is that these journalists are all progressives, just like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John Kerry. And what that means is, or at least part of it, it's godless. There is no due north on the moral compass. You winning is the objective, so whatever it requires to get there is okay.
Well, explain to our audience something which I think people are beginning to understand, but they haven't in the past, and that is the issue of access. If you don't have access to the White House or to members of Congress, to the Speaker, whomever, you literally can't get the stories you need to earn your keep at a newspaper or at a television. And so how does the issue of access play into what's going on right now?
Well, obviously it's a big part. But in my estimation, it's declining some because the ratings for these people are down. People are not paying attention to them. You know, just going back to what we talked about, you know, 35 years ago, everybody watched, you know, the Huntley Brinkley Report or Walter Cronkite. You know, the ABC News was, you know, much less watched. I don't even remember who did it. I guess it was the British guy. I forgot his name now, but I can see he died of cancer. You know, but they had huge budgets now, and they made money. All of these news agencies are losing money because their credibility is gone.
Well, their audience goes down, and their ad rates are directly tied to their audience, correct?
Exactly. When you have successful networks, you know, they can take the, you know, the gross margin, and, you know, from everything and plug stuff in to make up for it. But that only works for a while. When you're losing money, then, and you're losing market shares, things have to change. And it's why during the primary season on all of the networks that Donald Trump got so much coverage, because he drove up the ratings for them. Now, of course, it's like, you know, do we want somebody who has America First values, or do we, essentially, the progressives, they want a United States to be like Europe, where people can come and go as they please, borderless. And, you know, they're in Europe.
That was an interesting moment in the debate, wasn't it, when Chris Wallace, first moderator of any debate who's actually pressed Hillary Clinton on any issue,
yeah,
you know, quoted her email from WikiLeaks, and she went into a tirade about the Russians and Putin and how she wouldn't even address the content of the emails released by WikiLeaks. And we see the same thing now with Donna Brazile, I think that's how you pronounce her name, who is,
yeah, Donna Brazile,
who is head of the DNC, who is refusing to answer to the content of her own emails, saying that they were stolen, they were edited, they were, you know, forged, whatever. They've completely got together on a response which takes them off the hook for anything that might come out, which, by the way, may impact your prediction of a November 1st release. Now, that sort of sets us up to discuss this. Now, you are, your podcast of yesterday predicts a November 1st release from WikiLeaks, I think from WikiLeaks, maybe not, but you have an anonymous source whom you cannot name but you think is credible. Simplify that as much as possible and tell our audience what you believe will come out on November 1st.
Well, if you remember, you know, this whole thing about Benghazi, which the select committee, you know, from Congress that John Boehner initiated, did its best to get at things, but there was always, you know, slow walking release of material, and they never really completely got it all. What I anticipate happening, and it would be on the 1st of November that this is released, and that is the reason that it's so late, is because this is going to be so damning to Hillary Clinton and to Barack Obama that the Democrats will not have time to get another candidate. They think that this is going to be so explosive that it will and shatter Hillary Clinton's credibility and her ability to move forward. That's how bad it will be. And even though a great many people will have already cast votes, all states will still be undecided, you know, based upon people actually going to the polls on the 8th of November. Now, here's what it is. In the Hillary acting from the State Department.
So she's Secretary of State. She is.
This is 2012.
Yes.
And
this is before the Benghazi attack.
Before the Benghazi attack, yes. Thank you for, you know, for helping me out here with this. All right. She gave Stinger missiles to Anwar al-Sharia.
Now, who is he?
That's a group. That's a group that is not ISIS, but it, you know, they are supposed to have been, you know, fighting in Syria against Assad. Now, she got these missiles from Qatar, and they actually, with a deal that a guy named Turi, she put it together with him, and they bartered and brokered the thing. Now, these missiles ended up.
Now, let me ask you a question, though. Did she give these Stingers, or did she sell them?
I don't know that.
And so Ansar al-Sharia is a group fighting against Assad in Syria.
Yes.
And so she arranged for these Stinger missiles to be taken out of Qatar and delivered to them in Syria?
That I don't know either, how they did the transporting. But I do know this, that there was no congressional approval for this or oversight.
What about Pentagon?
I don't know that either. That is still something that, you know, has not been established. But here's the key. These Stinger missiles ended up in Afghanistan to be used against American planes. And one of them shot a Chinook helicopter with troops in it. American GIs but the guy didn't arm the explosive. So he shot it, and it went into the Chinook helicopter and essentially it somewhat disabled it, but they were able to land successfully. And the military saw that this was an American weapon.
Now, wait a minute. Is this, they're in Afghanistan when this was sunk?
They're in Afghanistan when this happened, yes.
Okay.
And they took the serial number, traced it back to the CIA in Qatar. And so here, Chris Stevens, when he went to Benghazi...
He's Ambassador Stevens, correct?
Ambassador Stevens.
And he was the man who was killed.
Yes, he was the man that was killed, one of the four in Benghazi. And his whole thing was to get the rest of these missiles back, to cover it up, to do...
How do we know that was his mission?
That will come out in the WikiLeaks as the connection.
So, in other words, he went to Benghazi subsequent to the Chinook helicopter being shot down in Afghanistan, and the serial number identified.
The helicopter was shut down on the 25th of July, and the State Department is panicked about all of this. Because if it comes out, and this is with Romney, hot on the heels of Barack Obama, this had it come out then, could have tipped that election. So they had to get all of this taken care of, and so this is why when all of the stuff was going down that evening, and all of the calls were made for help, over 300 that day alone. And every one of them was ignored because this was a life and death mission, and they essentially let them die.
So I have here that he arrived there in May 2012 as U.S. ambassador.
He was in Tripoli. That's where the embassy is.
Right. He arrived in Tripoli in May 2012. Right.
Right, and so the original how the Stingers got where they did is a little murky. I don't have all the details about that, but I do know that once it all came down and they knew that these were our Stinger missiles, which had been, given to Anwar al-Sharia without any congressional approval. See, that's the key, is that this acting independently as, going rogue is, and of course this is something that, Hillary Clinton's running for president now and saying she's a steady hand. And this absolutely shows that she wasn't. And it also shows that these emails that she deleted, because evidently what will be released comes from those 33,000 emails that were destroyed with bleach bits, so that, as Trey Gowdy said, not even God could read them, which I think was a really good line, by the way. But it's all going to come out and to be done in a way so that the Democrats cannot take her out and put somebody else in, and that this is going to potentially decide the election.
No, but hold on just a second, Jack. I'm going to challenge you a little bit, like your brother did on your podcast. The trouble with this, you describe it on your podcast as a smoking gun. And perhaps it is a smoking gun in terms of her involvement and Obama's involvement in providing stingers to the Syrian rebels, and which eventually ended up in the hands of Afghanistanis Taliban who shot at American helicopter with it. But the trouble with a smoking gun like this is it's such a complicated story with so many sort of holes in it, in the sense that, not holes in the sense of falsehoods, but holes in the sense of we just don't know the information that ties one to another. So how can this, let's say that this does in fact get released on November 1st, how is this story going to serve as a smoking gun when it's, you know, frankly, rather complicated?
The story is complicated. The smoking gun is just the same thing with Watergate would say complicated story.
That's true.
Yeah. The smoking gun with Watergate was that this was a massive cover-up. The smoking gun, it is the same here. This is a massive
cover-up. So it's a cover-up, not the crime.
Exactly. It's always the cover-up that brings
that's
people.
You're right. Absolutely right. If you're a Republican.
Well.
Sorry, I raised my voice.
There are stories that the mainstream, and this brings us back to the original part, stories that the mainstream media just absolutely, won't touch. And they really have given very little credence to the WikiLeaks and everything. So people just try and fight. I'm not real. And other than people like me who pay attention, it's like, well, what's this? The guy's up there. He's accused of being a pedophile. What's going on? I don't pay any attention to that. They don't even know that Joe Biden's the vice president. But this is going to be big enough and massive enough that nobody will be able to not cover it, number one. And number two, if you fall into the water with the media, there can be a feeding frenzy like piranha.
Yeah, if it becomes a story that boosts their ratings and so forth.
Yes.
But do you think they would risk booting their ratings at the cost of defeating Hillary Clinton?
Yes. If they think that that she's going to go down and that it's a lost cause, they will, they'll eat their children. And this is exactly what will happen.
So let me ask you this question, though. Is either she or Barack Obama on the record for denying something, whether it be the stingers, the source of the stingers that were used, the stinger that was used to shoot down the Chinook helicopter, or anything else that would actually constitute a cover-up?
Well, the what constitutes the cover-up is the deceit about the whole thing in saying that it was the YouTube video, and they wanted General Petraeus, who was head of the CIA at the time, to join them in that farce.
Okay, but you have not explained to our audience what this event has to do with the attack in Benghazi. What did cause the attack in Benghazi?
Radical Muslims wanting to kill Americans.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the stingers, yeah, with the use of them? But wait, but again, it's not a cover-up.
No, but here's the thing that I do know. once Speaker Boehner, this is, you know, a year and a half later, appoints Trey Gowdy to have the congressional committee to investigate Benghazi, the Taliban in Afghanistan, who know very little about American politics, but they figured it out that, wait a minute, there's no, Congress didn't know about this, and if Congress didn't know about this, then this is a political problem for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So they demanded, essentially as a ransom payment, five generals that were in Gitmo.
Now, who were those five generals, by the way? I mean, these were ISIS generals?
Yes, Taliban generals.
They were Taliban generals being held in Gitmo, which were given back and given to Qatar in exchange for what, Jack? We have 1 minute left in the segment. In exchange for what?
Bo Bergdahl. Exchange for this prisoner. Now, Obama and Hillary, they knew that he was a traitor, but it's better to take the hit for making a bad deal than for the truth about all this to come out. So they got their five generals back to keep quiet, and we got Bo Bergdahl, and, you know, Obama looked a little bit like an idiot, but he took that hit because the other was so much worse. And it's going to be so much worse.
We're going to continue trying to piece this narrative together and estimate the impact it will have on the upcoming election, along with other media mysteries. Right after this short break, we'll come back and talk with Jack Watts.
Some months ago, Father John Ricardo and Father Ron Brown teamed up for an evening of teaching on spiritual warfare.
I think people are here for lots of different reasons tonight. We're like mailmen. We're in the business of delivering the gospel. And because you're a mailman or a mail person, whatever you are, and you're delivering the mail, every once in a while dogs come after you to try to prohibit you from delivering the mail. So if you're a smart mailman, you carry a stick so that when the dogs come, you can beat them off and you can deliver the mail. That's what we do. But we're also trying to help people, first of all, maybe tell you better get a stick if you don't have one, and to help maybe find you a stronger one as well.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. This dynamic duo will repeat their tag team approach to teaching on November 30th. Their topic then will be the theology of the body. But on our next program, they teach on spiritual warfare. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Every day, men are bombarded with messages that to be a real man, we have to buy this, do that, or act this way. Men, are you listening? You're already a man, and you're manly, because that's how God made you. Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body reminds men that just by possessing a man's DNA, you are encoded with God's spiritual and physical gifts of masculinity. Yes, you can always work to become a better, a godlier, stronger, or gentler man, but no matter how badly you fail or how much you struggle, nobody can take your manliness away from you. Masculinity is a God-given gift planted deep within each man, and while it can always be developed, you don't have to earn it, and nothing you do can make you lose it. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Back with Jack Watts. We're talking about his prediction that on November 1st there is going to be a email dump from some source, presumably not from Vladimir Putin, that would provide evidence that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama provided Stinger missiles to a group of Syrian rebels called Al-Sharia, and that they were passed to them by the CIA in Qatar. And that eventually one of those ended up, at least one of those ended up in Afghanistan, hands of the Taliban, who shot down a American helicopter. Fortunately, it was not armed. Therefore, the helicopter came down, but nobody died. But since the Stinger was intact, the serial numbers could be taken off of it and traced to American source, U.S. source in Qatar under the oversight of the CIA. And at the end of the last section of our interview, we were discussing the disproportionality, the rampant disproportionality of this swap, of this young man, this soldier who deserted U.S. armed forces and into the hands of ICE, of the Taliban, and then was subsequently swapped for five very high-level Taliban generals being held at Gitmo and Guantanamo. And the sheer disproportionality of that swap, I mean, what was this young man worth who had already committed a traitorous act? Why was his worth so great that he was worth five seasoned, hardened, murderous Taliban generals? What is your theory behind that, Jack?
Well, to begin with, he had not been charged with treason at the time. And he was being treated like he was had just been captured rather than, if you remember the original scenario that was being put forward, it's that, you know, he was just captured and we needed to get back our soldier because we always get our soldiers back. And, you know, that's our tradition and, you know, that's a good thing. But then it started coming out with the people that were in his platoon, that, well, you know, he didn't get captured by the Taliban. He took off one morning and decided to join them. And that's what, and so we went searching for him and six people died even doing that. This is not a good guy. Well, that just kind of started to play out afterwards. And so it looked like, well, what kind of idiot is President Obama that he gives five generals for a guy that ends up being a traitor? But the truth of the matter is that that was just a ruse. It was a cover story that made Obama look bad, no doubt about it.
But he was willing to take that hit, as you put it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's better to get a drunk driving ticket than to admit you were in a hit and run in a drunk driving thing. So, you know, this is what they did. And, you know, and well, this is a great day.
So this kept the Taliban quiet about the knowledge they had of possessing American Stinger missiles, firing them into a helicopter. Do we know whether any of the other helicopters that were shot down in Afghanistan where soldiers did die, were hit by Stinger missiles?
We don't know, or at least I don't. And, you know, this was just breaking stuff. And, you know, here's a couple of the other things. When those five generals, if you remember the way they did it, says, well, we aren't exactly releasing them. We are sending them to Qatar, who's going to keep an eye on them. Well, Qatar was behind the whole thing. And, you know, and just by the way, Qatar, as a nation, has given $5 million to Hillary.
$5 million or billion?
Million.
To the foundation.
Yes. And they also gave on Bill Clinton's birthday $1 million to him as a gift just, you know, for a five-minute conversation. So, you know,
now you think that this has something to do with the highly publicized secret meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch at an airport where they claim to only talk about their grandchildren. You think that conversation was about why it is that Hillary Clinton could never be indicted because this information about bypassing Congress, arranging for these Stinger missiles to be delivered to Syrian rebels and eventually ending up in the hands of the Taliban would be revealed, correct?
If it all came out, they were all going to go to jail.
Why would they actually go to jail?
Well,
they're Democrats. Democrats don't go to jail. I gotcha.
Yeah. kind of, that's true. Blago went to jail for pay to play, but Hillary certainly never has. And, you know, I mean to tell you, she is the Michael Myers, with the hockey mask, who never dies, and gets shot, gets thrown out, or whatever, just never dies. And, I mean, I have thought numerous times, well, she's going to finally go down, and she never has. So, she has more lives than a cat or Dracula. But we'll see what happens. This is very potentially explosive, and I do not believe that the mainstream media can ignore a story of this magnitude once it breaks. And, what we're talking about now is a lot of speculative parts of it, but when it's all tied together, it can be potentially very damning. Now, my one fear is that this is, by waiting until the 1st of November, that just gives 1 week for this story to build, and that it may not be enough to take care of everything. But I can tell you this. The last week of the Obama administration, he's not going to be able to play much golf. He's going to be very busy writing pardons, because if he doesn't, this is going to really get very, very, very ugly, and some people will go to jail and should go to jail. You cannot do these things and cover them up the way they have without consequences, or you should not be able to. Now, this is where the independent media has always been, essentially the fourth estate, and that, to hold people accountable, but it's acting more like Pravda and Izvestia for the Soviet Union to ratify and be the mouthpiece for, the administration in America, just the way that those newspapers were for the Soviet Union. For everything they did, there was a good reason for it, and they never were wrong. And this is what they have done, and, of course, they have this huge vested interest.
Okay, let me challenge you a bit more like your brother did in such a funny way on the podcast. It's kind of like Car Talk, but it's about politics. And by the way, give our listeners a little information on how they can listen to your Monday morning podcast.
Actually, it's we do it on Monday afternoon, but it's Blog Talk Radio, and the name of the program is What's Up, WATTSUP, like Jack Watts and Dick Watts. So we just call it What's Up, a little kind of fun. And you can Google it. And you just Google Jack Watts, it'll come up, and my books and everything else will come up. I mean, I'm not famous, but I'm fairly well known.
Famous enough, but you're as famous as you want to be. Believe me.
You know what I know,
and you know exactly what I mean.
I absolutely do. I put on the blogcast and on my Facebook page that I was not suicidal, and that I had no intention of being in the park, and I don't own a gun, so I couldn't even.
Jack, you're about the 100th person. You're about the 100th person who had any connection to the Clintons who has said publicly, "I'm not going to commit suicide."
Yeah.
If they find me dead, it isn't suicide.
Right.
All those lady friends of Bill Clinton have said that, and. Of course, the folks that do end up being dead, we find subsequently have some sort of ties to the Democratic National Committee or to the Clintons, and had access to these emails that have been released. Now, I'm not making any accusations. It's just that level of coincidence begins to become hard to accept.
Well, if you were selling insurance and had an actuary table, the chance of these number of people dying by self-inflicted gunshot wounds would be astronomical. The chances would be less that O.J. didn't kill Nicole.
Yeah, and I have always been suspicious of so-called conspiracy theories. In fact, most of the time, if you push them hard enough, you find out they are just theories. They may be based upon, or they are usually based upon some pretty compelling facts, which is how they get some traction in the first place. But then there become jumps in the narrative, unproven parts, or parts that can't be verified. And as you know in journalism, you used to be required to have two sources for every important fact that you had in a story. Somewhere along the line, like you say, after Walter Cronkite, that criteria of journalists went out the window. Now all you have to do is have an anonymous source whose name you will not reveal. Now, you have an anonymous source whose name you're not going to reveal, but you're not claiming to be a journalist. You are claiming to have information, privileged information, which you strongly believe will be released on November 1st. Am I right in summarizing it that way?
Yes, that's a good summary of it. And this is all part of the WikiLeaks stuff. And there's one other interesting thing about this. If you'll notice that Hillary Clinton repeatedly says that that Donald Trump is tied to the Russians who have gotten all of this and they have hacked everything. And of course, it probably they may have done that. But the WikiLeaks probably does, comes from a separate independent source. But think of it this way. If you were Vladimir Putin, and of course he has said publicly that if you want peace, vote for Trump. If you want war, vote for Hillary.
Especially after the last debate.
Yeah, and that may be a ruse. Because think of it this way. If she gets in and can keep some of these things covered up, and he has knowledge about them, then she is subject to blackmail in the same way that Obama was subject to blackmail from the Taliban to get those leaders back. So he would really, by saying, I want him, not her, that makes people say, well, okay, then we want her, not him.
And we're going to underscore the fact that your supposition that Obama was blackmailed is a speculation on your part.
Oh, it is indeed a speculation.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. The dots definitely come together and you get a full picture, and it makes some very inexplicable things understandable, swapping Bergdahl for five generals.
I must admit, that was a very strange arrangement.
Well, and just putting it together with what I just said, now it makes sense from Obama's perspective why he would do it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, in other words, there had to have been something important on the line.
Yes.
Because I really don't think President Obama cared much about what happened to that young man. But we've seen already his willingness to pay a very big ransom price, whether it's generals, Taliban generals, or money, our money, to cover up blunders, which is a nice way of saying this, a practice or an action that he does not want to be embarrassed by, in order to get out of it, such as he did with Iran and the captured, I believe they were naval soldiers, correct?
Correct.
I mean, why did it take, how much money did it take to get those soldiers back?
Well, nobody knows for sure. They had one plane that was in cash, $400 million, and then as it turned out, I believe it's like $1.7 billion in actual $100 bills. So somewhere between those two figures. And
which was incredibly imprudent because it means that Americans can be snatched and held for that kind of ransom, and we've said, okay, we'll pay it. That makes, and that's not going to happen to the common citizen, but it's going to happen to diplomats, and it's going to happen to military. It could happen to top A-list Forbes 500 businessmen and so forth. It makes, it seems to me that is a very imprudent action, but not as imprudent, and I wanted to ask you about this, than Hillary Clinton saying on public television in front of a million people that the United States has a four-minute, I don't know if you call it delay time or trigger time between when...
Between the order and the firing of a nuclear missile.
Yes. I mean, that was... Wasn't that top secret?
No. It was SAP.
What's that?
And that's a special access privilege, and that's one level above top secret. And only congressmen investigating do not have that access. Senators investigating do not have an SAP access. That is reserved for, you know, for people in the administration and people in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And
probably only a select group of people within the administration and the Pentagon.
Oh, just very top echelon.
Now, has there been any outcry from the mainstream media about that?
Not that I can see. But, you know, of course, on the social media, it's all over the place. And, you know, places like Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, that, you know, or Drudge or Breitbart, it will be all over the place. It's all over the place.
But, Jack, here's what we used to call the $64,000 question, which isn't so much money anymore than it was in my youth or yours. I think we've become so polarized in this particular election that Hillary Clinton's revealing of such a highly classified fact is simply going to be ignored by her supporters. They are not going to be deterred by anything that isn't just like child molestation with a, you know, in video. It has to be totally, and I'm not saying she has, and I'm not even alleging she has. I'm just saying it has to be that blatant a crime or a misdeed. And Trump's people are sort of the same way. I mean, they're trotting out all these ladies day by day. I don't think they are truthful. I think there something may have happened, some small discourtesy or ill-mannered or call it macho thing that Trump did. We all know he's perfectly capable of it. And, you know, 15 years ago, these kinds of things were more socially accepted than they are now. I remember the huge change that occurred while I was a college professor in terms of, you know, relating to faculty and so forth. We used to put arms around each other, and we just stopped doing that at some point. But anyway, the Trump supporters are not going to pay any attention to these ladies, just like the Hillary supporters are not going to pay any attention to what she did in that debate. Are they going to pay attention to what may be revealed on November 1st?
I think that almost all Americans know about Benghazi. I mean, if you had said 6 or 7 years ago, you know, where is Benghazi, you might as well have been asking, you know, that libertarian, you know, where's Aleppo? And they wouldn't have a clue. But everybody knows about Benghazi. Millions have seen those, you know, the movie, and there's that this has never been resolved is like a canker sore inside people's mouths. When this comes out, that people will pay attention, and the uproar is going to be deafening And I do not believe that the mainstream media will be able to ignore this WikiLeaks.
Do you think the other side has anything really, really tumultuous that they're holding on to in case this is revealed on November 1st in order to try to take the spotlight away from it?
Of course. I suspect that they will say, you know, here's an 8-year-old that Donald Trump has molested or something like that. They will do. There is nothing that they won't do to keep from being held accountable and, you know, to keep from being taken out of power.
Okay. One last question I want you to discuss. We have 4 minutes left in this segment. In the last couple of days, we've heard, you know, this argument that Democrats, whether it's Hillary or Donna Brazile or John Podesta, they don't have any obligation, either moral, ethical, or just human, to talk about these emails that are being published on WikiLeaks because, A, they say they were stolen, B, they say it was a Russian plot to influence the election, 3, they say they have been edited, reformatted, or invented. Is that going to work in the next 2 weeks?
Absolutely not. You cannot stonewall these questions forever, and they're going to start asking. When this comes out, they're going to be asking Josh Earnest, you know, what about this? You know, at the press conferences, and you know he's not going to have an answer.
He's going to try to use that answer.
Well, sure, of course, but the thing is that when you stonewall, this is what Nixon did. Nothing to see, move on. Nothing to see, move on. And that made people double down on the pressure for him to come clean. And it's the same thing. This is a replication of Watergate, and it's going to be very interesting to see what comes from this. Now, let me just say one more thing. If the people who are completely in the know about this, which would be Julian Assange and a few other people because he's got all kinds of outlets to, you know, to foil their attempts to squash him, if they did not think that this was going to do what they believe it will do, they would have released it earlier. And they've got all this stuff right now. They're just parsing this stuff out to just kind of let her, you know, die from a million little cuts and before the one comes out. But this is a big one.
I might remind you, Jack, since you are, we're brought up in a Catholic family, that November 1st is All Saints Day.
Yes. And so
so maybe the saints will be on the side of pro-life, huh?
Yes, and October 31st is Halloween, where, you know, that's where the witches fly. And we got one that's flying around all over the place.
Oh, come
and
on.
We'll see what happens on All Saints Day. I like that very much. The difference between Halloween and All Saints Day, where you're given this, you know, the trajectory of this election, and that seems to fit pretty well, actually. Good job, young man.
Well, you know, I'm a convert. I know these things. So I want to say to Jack Watts, I'm thrilled that you've been back on Church and Culture, and I want to just briefly mention all your fifth, volume 5 of your is it the Blood Moon series or the Full Moon Frenzy? 5 Moon series of novels, correct?
Moon series and Full Moon Frenzy is the first book. Now, after the election, the book's already ready, but I'm not coming out with the new book before the election because it'd get lost. I'm an Unholy Seduction, and it's about people getting involved in a cult. It's a novel, but This is twisted truth, and how the truth of Scripture gets twisted to where people become susceptible. And when you have seduction, that's always it's pretty stuff. So
we'll have you back and talk about unholy seduction, and hopefully we'll all be happy when you come back. Jack Watts, thanks for being my guest on Church and Culture once again.
Neil, thanks for having me.
And to all of you who are listening, we have a brief break and come back with another great guest.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Is discipline kind? I asked that question yesterday, didn't I? And I'm going to ask it all this week, because I believe discipline is ultimately kind. As we said yesterday, discipline gets a bad rap. It's not a popular concept nowadays. But God designed it so that reality ultimately wins. Discipline is a loving, durable gift. Why is discipline kind? Let me give you the first reason. Because you see, you are your child's first teacher about life. You love that child. You want to kindly teach that child, holding him or her accountable. If you don't, and let's double underline this next part, the world will. You do not want the world to discipline your child. The world does not love your child. The world does not get mitigating circumstances. The world's lessons are not soft. For the next 50 years after that child leaves you, she or he will be left to deal with the world, who will hold them accountable in harsh ways. That is why our discipline now is ultimately kind, because it keeps a child from being battered and bruised for many, many years at the hands of people who do not love him like his mom and dad. I'm Dr. Ray.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, Chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
Sunday's Gospel is about humility. Jesus seems to associate with and give his best gifts to those whom other people avoid and look down on. St. Matthew describes Jesus associating with a Roman army officer whose servant was paralyzed and in pain. It's hard for us to imagine how much the Jews of Jesus' day hated the Romans. Yet Jesus congratulates this man on his faith and cures his servant. St. Luke shows Jesus forgiving a woman caught in adultery. Everyone else wanted to stone her to death. Then a prostitute crashes a party, washes his feet with her tears, anoints them with very expensive ointment, and dries them with her hair. Everyone there was disgusted with her, but also with Jesus for accepting her. Remember little Zacchaeus, who collected taxes for the Romans? He climbed a tree to see who Jesus was, and Jesus went to his house for a dinner. He met a Samaritan woman at a well and spoke to her. She'd had 5 husbands, was now simply living with a man. People thought she was complete scum, but Jesus didn't. Today we hear about 2 men in the temple, a Pharisee and a tax collector. The Pharisee was full of himself and full of conceit, enjoyed the prize of class and self-righteousness, and the pride of being one of the right people. He built his self-deception by comparing himself with the other guy out there, the tax collector. Yet who does Jesus praise? The humble tax collector. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the reading read this Sunday at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Join me and my guests as we try to develop conversations of consequence. It's talk radio where God matters, looking at all life through the lens of the Scripture and the teaching.